Welcome to On Digital Media, the beach edition. I'm John Federico, your host and executive producer. And joining me this evening, we are spread out a bit. We'll start with Mr. Craig Calder. We are no longer in the same town, Mr. Calder. You are in our wonderful hometown. How are you, sir?
Excellent. Greetings and salutations. Sorry I missed the last couple. I completely blanked. I was traveling last week. And I missed our last one.
We've all had a few misses here, so no worries. We'll get into that. People always ask what we're doing, so we'll tell them.
And ironically, I could have logged in. I was on West Coast time, and I was in my hotel room, but I had other things on my.
You were in the West Coast. You didn't ping Shailin?
Exactly. Well, I was in.
Oh, Oregon. No, you were in Oregon. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yes, big difference. And Ms. Simmons joining us from the Bay Area, Silicon Valley. Where are you now?
I'm in California.
Okay.
As always, in the Bay Close Area, enough. Dialing in. And so, yeah.
So lots going on. So this is the beach edition. I have, you'll notice this is not my home studio with the half-painted walls. I'm actually working this week from my in-laws' house. My in-laws have graciously invited us down to their retirement home on the beach. Not on the beach, but really a few blocks from the beach. So, it's a lovely house. They're lovely people, and they have good broadband. So here I am. I'm working from the beach. So it is the beach edition.
Very shabby chic.
Yeah.
I kind of miss your big sort of throne, Death Star-like throne in the background, though.
Well, I could just do this for you. Does that make you feel better? Yes, the big throne. Yes. And it's really nice during the day because my mother-in-law has this wonderful built-in desk that she created. And right next to me here is a balcony. And if you look to the left, it goes it shows you the bay. And if you look at the right, it shows us the ocean. And it's lovely. A little too hot out to do this outside, though, so I'm indoors. Anyway,
should we discuss the topic of the moment?
Topic of the moment, which is my location? No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
No, the U.S. just got knocked out of the World Cup this afternoon.
Oh, really? Oh, missed that.
Shot two well. Shots at the last minute.
They represented themselves well. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
I'm surprised. Not that I have any doubts about the capabilities of our U.S. team. It's just that it is not a U.S. sport, right? It's not as popular here, and there's less of a pool of players to pull from. So honestly, I'm surprised we made it as far as we did, just given the fact that, again, we don't have that bench of talent throughout the country. We're dealing with very specific folks. So,
well, that's ironic you say that, because from what you're saying, I don't think you've been following it very closely. But one of the big One of the big controversies is the United States hired Jurgen Klinsmann, who's a famous German soccer player who played on the World Cup team for Germany and coached Germany and came to now he's out in the Bay Area coaching the U.S. team. And he's really kind of turned them around. But one of the and he's really bringing that kind of European mentality to playing. But the big thing is he is getting all of these German players, German-American players, and a lot of black German players whose fathers were servicemen over in Germany and lived there. And I really didn't get it why he was, maybe he just liked German players, but he was in an interview and somebody asked him, and when he explained it, it made perfect sense. He said that in Germany, you have the Bundesliga, which is like the NFL of soccer. You say the Premier League in the UK is right there anyway. Uh-huh. So the difference is that kids in Germany are raised to play professional soccer at a young age. So it's almost like minor league baseball, right? If you're a good high school player, they put you in the minor leagues. You don't go to college. I mean, some kids go to college and play, but you immediately go from amateur to professional while you're still a young teenager. And that's what the Germans do. So as opposed to the US model where they send kids to college and they spend a lot of time and then eventually they treat these kids like professionals from the very beginning. And they get early training at a very high level that they just don't have here. So it makes perfect sense now. But I think the interesting thing is everybody says, oh, soccer's going to, you know, it's finally got to the level of the other sports. But I think that it definitely hit a milestone this year. And, you know, it's never going to be as popular as football or basketball or baseball, but it's definitely caught the attention of the American people, I think.
It has. And I think social media has really, you know, social media has really moved that along, I would have
to say.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just the fact that you can watch the games on your laptop through ESPN Go is like game changing, you know?
Pun intended. There you go. Yeah, that is very interesting. Oh, well and you add
the other interesting thing, though, we were very fortunate we're in the same hemisphere as Brazil, or the same longitude as Brazil. So the games are either at like 3 o'clock or 6 o'clock, right? So it's very convenient for the U.S. to watch. And on the West Coast, it's a little tougher. But the next one is in Russia. So, you know, you're going to have games at like 4 a.m. and stuff, and you're going to have to watch tape delayed, which is never fun. But, you know, I think that had a lot to do with it. People could actually watch the games live here.
Yes, I'll agree with that. And what's funny is that a friend of ours, well, a friend of Shailin's in my, I don't know if you've met him, Alan Mazan, he works at a big global ad agency. And apparently they all just knew that this was coming, and they basically said, please, they sent a message from the IT department, email from the IT department. We know it's World Cup fever, and we know you're all going to watch it, but please don't watch individual streams at your desk. Everyone go to the same conference room and watch one stream so that those of us who don't have the luxury of watching the event can still get our work done. I thought that was very funny. But very apropos, because you can get all this stuff now, right, over the interwebs, which, you know, not too long ago you couldn't. So it's a big deal. So what else is going on? Let's see. Well, lots of stuff. I'll start. What the hell? Busy. Crazy busy. We had some really big conferences in the last few weeks. We have one on the West Coast where Shailen and I had an opportunity to get together and have some low sugar Cosmos, which are very good. At least that's what I had. You had a lychee Cosmo.
I had two lychee.
You had two lychee. Yes. Not low sugar. Well, you know, they were still, it's still very light. So I got to see Shailen. That was great. We had a big event out there. We were working with the Giga Ohm folks on their last conference, which was awesome. And then here in New York, we were working with the MongoDB World conference, which was a lot of fun and crazy busy. Rolled out a whole bunch of new features. So if you want to learn all about those, go to snapcapture.net. That is a URL I grabbed just because it's easier to say and spell than all the other URLs we own. So go to snapcapture.net and you'll learn more about that. Ms. Simmons, you have some big news. Tell us about that. In fact, I only want to bring this up because it's going to affect what we talk about on the show today and going forward. So really, you need to share.
Yeah, so I have gone to the dark side. As many people have mentioned to me among my friends, I started working for Google last week as the head of partner marketing for Google Play. And so I think last when I sort of chatted with folks about my sort of daytime job, I have been with Harman helping them launch a Connect the Car service. It's a great 3.5 years, did a lot of amazingly fun work with folks like Honda and Subaru and Porsche and so forth, and launched some great services in the car. So, but, you know, since then I've been a bit of a busy beaver, and I've gone out and basically done a couple of things, which is find a daytime job. And that's here at Google, and in the Silicon Valley. And then, I've started to work on my own startup. So it's still self. And so, as we get closer to pushing out a MVP, for those folks who are not, acronym heavy, it's minimum, I have a hard time saying things today. minimum viable product. I will be happy to sort of share the the news about what the South startup is about. So that's awesome. What I've been doing.
But congratulations.
Yes, impacts how we sort of talk about things. I will do much as Steve, our missing co-host, do when Audible and Amazon is mentioned. I will nod politely concerning, you know, news related to Google. Obviously, it's a very big company. I'm only privy to a very small piece, but I would prefer to basically not comment too much on Google specific news. So.
You're better off. It's fine. Although it's funny because we're still catching up from Google I.O. So I was going through our list of stories. I was like, oh, we can't talk about that. Oh, we can't talk about that either.
Oh, no, no. But that's exactly the point, that we absolutely should talk about it on this show. And so I just won't be basically commenting on those. And so, but again, it's a, you know, we absolutely should be covering topical news like that, you and Craig and Steve, right? So.
Steve, the mythical Steve.
We've heard about him, but we haven't
seen unicorn.
Him. The unicorn. The one episode I had him scheduled for, I had to reschedule because I had a meeting in the city. So, yeah. Well, I mean, I guess can I say this? I don't know. I'll ask my attorney. Anyway, no, I've just been busy. We're. I guess I can say this. We're raising around now, and it's just sucking up way too much of my time. And so I had a meeting. I had a last minute meeting come up that one particular night, so I had to cancel. And it was the night Steve was going to join us, and I screwed it up. So I'll get him back.
Yeah. I mean, and of course, nothing that we say here represents any of our companies for Steve and myself and, you know, Craig and John. But yeah, so hopefully we'll get Steve back on because he is like a unicorn. We've heard about him. We haven't spotted him in quite a while on the show.
Yes, he'll be back. He promises me he'll be back. So, and you know, Steve, I think once he gets in a groove, he'll be back every week. But it's just getting that first, taking that first step.
It's not a big deal. We never talk about Amazon or Google. So,
yeah, never happens. No, never happens. All right. So let's see. What are we getting? What are we starting with this week? We are starting with actually a listener email. This comes from Jim Timmerman. Jim writes, the media, quotes, air quotes, the media, years ago was much easier to define and point to, local and national TV and radio outlets and newspapers. Then that number increased dramatically with the addition of cable and satellite technology. Now with the development of digital technologies, the number of media outlets is no longer definable. I wonder if the time has come to define and label it, in quotes, differently. Very much like to hear your thoughts. So if I can encapsulate that, let's see. Do I get this right? Jim wants to know how we consider what's media, as in official media, and what's not. Does that sound right? I mean, is there an official media anymore? I mean, I guess if you're the White House, you do. You know, you don't just have some guy walking in with a Twitter account saying I'm the media, right? You have to have credentials. But outside of official channels like that. I don't know. Is there really such a thing as the media anymore? Meaning the official media.
I think like when we used to talk about the media, it was, you know, focused on journalism. And I think that line has become blurred, where it's not so much, it's all the different channels, it's entertainment, it's, you know, digital, and it's really just expanded. And I understand where Jim's question is coming from. And, you know, it's like, you know, the thing is that, you know, mediums don't go away. They just move over and other ones pop up next to them and it just keeps expanding and the lines are blurring.
I'm wondering if, I mean, Jim is wondering whether or not we need to just define and sort of label it differently. And my question is, do we need to? Because the reality is that, you know, how we source information and data has radically changed from sort of in many ways to now even user generated. And so would we really state that, for example, you know, while Arab Spring was happening in Egypt and in other places, you know, that the citizen reporters who are reporting out of Twitter are not viable sort of sources of media to a certain extent, because it was very challenging for quote unquote traditional media to get in and get the news that they wanted to get to you know, the global, you know, populace. And so I find that actually looking to define and label it differently actually is very traditional in its outlook, you know? And yep. So I would say loosely and personally, I like to just, you know, I don't think we need to label that anymore. I think the lines are completely blurred and that's actually great to my mind. So
it's a common thing for the past incarnation to try and define the new incarnation in the older terms. And I think that's what's happening here. We saw it with online, right? Where people were trying to define online with offline terms and measurements and those types of things. When the truth is, it's something completely different and it needs a new definition.
Well, that just, it's funny you should say that because it reminds me of the concept of, or the term that we commonly use as the effective CPM. It's like, because everything's got to get crammed into the concept of a CPM because they want to equate it with old school media. So we come up with effective CPM as the concept. And what is that, right? It's just trying to calibrate new media to existing media.
Yeah. I mean, that's just a KPI that they came up to measure print and TV and then online adopted it because the media buyers were comfortable with it. Is it the best way to measure digital audiences and future audiences? I doubt it.
No, but what I do have to say about this is that this is Shailene spoke about it more from a journalistic or broader perspective, but Craig, you went right in on the advertiser perspective, right? So, you know, that's something to consider. Like, is it new media? Is it only really media if advertisers back it? And I'm being facetious to some degree, but you know, media is media. Like my Twitter account, I'm trying to think of a hugely popular Twitter account that people follow. You know, there are Twitter accounts that break news all the time. And some of them are created by enthusiasts, people who have no advertiser backing whatsoever. They just do it to do it. Does that mean they're not a credible source of media because they don't have someone, you know, putting dollars behind them?
From my perspective, it's more about channels and then the amazing number of different channels that are coming up. You know, when you have satellite radio, and then now you have internet shows like this one. I mean, we are part of the new media diaspora, you know, and it's like, do we consider ourselves on the same level of the New York Times? Of course not. But we are a form of media. We are a form of content, and it's relevant to, you know, our audience. Is it comparable to others? You know, who knows? And I think that's when you have such a wide difference in the different. It makes it hard to define it with the old terms that we were used to.
I think what's challenging here is that in the old paradigm where, you know, three people coming up with a very distinct sort of point of view and very niche market hardly ever gets basically pitched anything. And so, and our distribution network is somewhat limited to maybe friends and family in a very small network. And so today, I mean, yes, we are not New York Times or Wall Street Journal, but we, you know, are considered media because the last time I checked, you know, all of us have gotten press passes for ODM. And not only that, but the single biggest indictment of the reason why we're being considered media is that every day we get pitched press releases every day from a variety of different folks, folks from everything from HBO to folks who are hawking products and even clothing lines. And so, you know, if that is, I guess the question would be, you know, is media basically defined as anybody who has enough of a megaphone and a voice to which other people basically reach out to you to basically disseminate news? And if that is the case and that's how we should be defining it, then, you know, does it really require a label? Does this require a label versus, you know, are we lumped into traditional media? Do we really need any label at all for, you know, niche podcasts and content areas, right?
Well, so think you, following that line, one would say that if you have reach beyond X, I don't know what X is or N, you know, use whatever number you want, whatever placeholder you want. If you have reach beyond to people your media, I guess, right? In some respects, because the others are listening to you, perhaps just simply because they can relate to your opinions, or they feel like they're learning something, or whatever it might be. And so, based on that, your media. I guess if you have a listenership of, you know, one or less, or, you know, an audience of one or fewer, I guess you're not. What's that?
So we're talking to you, Jim.
That's right. Thank you, Jim. Yes, we appreciate you listening. You know, we know we have more than Jim, although we value every member, every listener. But I guess that's really what it comes down to then. If we think about what Shailen just said, if you have some sort of reach, which some reach and regular reach would basically assume some influence. And so I guess, you know, that the basic definition of media kind of lies right there. I don't know.
For the longest time, I looked at ODM as a very niche sort of, for lack of a better word, not even media, but a newsletter, right? Mm-hmm. And it really, I think, completely shifted my mindset and placed us into what I call low-end media, or low-end not in quality, folks, but in terms of to a certain degree reach, and certainly the covers, the topics that we cover. I felt like we crossed that list from being sort of newsletter-like, when, again, the press releases from big corporations start crossing our lines, and also when we start getting approached to basically speak on panels as industry analysts. And so when that line got crossed a couple of years ago, that's when I started feeling like, look, you know, this isn't a bunch of newsletter folks anymore, right? Nothing wrong with that, but it becomes sort of more media oriented. And so, and again, do we need to define that, right? Because to the extent that the activists, you know, in different countries have, you know, a voice on Twitter, you know, that makes them just as viable a media outlet and media source as anybody else. So,
well, especially, yes. And when you use that example too, we're talking about first person accounts, right? So what's more valuable, getting a professional journalist in there, if you can, or getting the first person account as soon as it happens? Well, yeah, I think the answer is obvious, right? Get the first person account, interpret it later. It doesn't matter if that person has credentials or not. They're still providing a service, and in some respects, they are media.
Yeah, and Twitter is a media, right? I mean, for the longest time, people really consider it not to be a media vehicle, but it is a media vehicle. This is where most people gather news in a strange sort of way. I think the most telling was that, you know, when the Boston Marathon bombings occurred, I believe NPR had quoted a doctor who had been coming off of shift and basically was reading Twitter and found out that the Boston bombing took place and basically decided to go back on shift. You know, and because he was following his son, who was a runner in a marathon. And so all the news was coming fast and furious on Twitter. He didn't find this news on, you know, any traditional media that he was checking, right? He went back on shift because he checked Twitter, and that became his news source. And that's a very interesting experience, because people keep talking about social media as, you know, communications products and tools, but really, in many ways, Facebook and Twitter becomes a news outlet as well, and media outlet.
With the Boston bomber story, the friend of my wife's happened to live in the house that the guy hid in the boat in the
yard. Oh, wow.
And she went online and said, hey, they just caught the guy who did the Boston bomber. He was hiding in my father-in-law's boat in the house next to us. Wow. That was like, you know, before any news agency had it. It was just in her Facebook feed.
Right. And is she a journalist?
No,
that's exactly. So, and who cares? You know, she was able to provide that as a, you know, as a service to the worldwide community. No, So Jim, media, you know, I don't think any of us are going to, you know, we're not experts in that regard. I don't think we're going to come up with the answer here, but hopefully we've given you and others something to think about. You know, if you have reach, and people are willing to tune into you for whatever reason that may be, you are the media. And it's I would venture to say that more and more media will be distributed, just like shows like this. right? Where you'll have niches and niches and niches. You'll still have your mass media, you know, the Boston bombing, you know, the international news, politics, etc. But more and more people are going to be getting their media from places just like this. And hopefully that sheds a little light on what we think. And if you have any other thoughts, feel free to reach out to us at comments@odmcast.com. We always love to hear from our listeners. And you can send a follow-up on this topic or, of course, send us something completely new. So,
I miss zines.
Zines. But blogs are the new zines. Come on. Right. The difference between blogs and zines are what? Paper?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And photocopy machines.
Exactly.
Yes. Exactly.
Collages and Unabomber-looking type faces.
Oh, no. If you go back to Boing Boing, they're bringing back some of that original sort of, you know, zine-like experience, which...
Yes, they have been. I've noticed that. Though the one thing I noticed Boing Boing has stopped doing is publishing full feeds. That annoys the crap out of me. I want to support Boing Boing. I love them, you know, but when I'm on the train and I'm, you know, using a cellular connection, you know, I have to like, they only post, you know, a lead, and then I have to click through on my phone to read the rest of the story. And it annoys me. But
I gotta make, you know, come on, page.
I want to see them succeed. So of course I will continue to, you know, click through, but yeah, it's a bit annoying.
They're not alone. A lot of the news feeds are moving in that direction.
Yeah, not surprising. Not surprising. All right. So, Jim, thank you very much for your question. Let's move on. Speaking of the media, Aereo. All right. So let's cover Aereo for those of us who don't know. I think anyone who listens to the show knows what Aereo is, but who wants to take that explanation? Anyone? Bueller? Come on. I'm going to pick one of you if you don't raise a hand. Shailin, what's Aereo?
Aereo it's kind of, for lack of a better word, a bit like a TiVo-like product. It's very sort of microscopic, if you can see my little hand here. Everybody has a small little antenna about this big in this farm, sort of, I guess, an antenna farm that for this company Aereo, and they basically allowed all of the consumers to get a feed of live television but be able to DVR it, for lack of a better word. And so, the Supreme Court ruling basically told us that, in fact, that was not okay. So I'm going to sort of forthright and say that, you know, I was very disappointed by this particular ruling, much like a lot of folks who have been tracking this particular legal court case up at the Supreme Court. This is almost akin to basically the court saying that it's not okay to do DVR or, you know, tape the shows from my feeds. So,
well, all right. So where's the gray area there? Let's talk for a second about the gray area. So, because this is what I find so, I hate to be so dramatic about it, appalling about this ruling. Okay. So it's okay for me to be like our friend Steve Hatch, right? And buy an HD antenna for $25 at Best Buy that I suction cup to my window, and I pull in 720p channels over the air, record them on my DVR, and that's cool, right? No problem. It's digital, right? So I'm getting bits from over the wire to my DVR. So it's digital. Aereo allows you to rent an antenna for whatever period of time you're using it. They literally have if you think of a server room where you have racks and racks of computers, you have racks and racks of antennas sitting in the middle of a city, let's say New York. And for a period of time, I can rent an antenna, an available antenna, because in reality, think about it. Let's say they have more subscribers than they have antennas. You know, by law, one antenna per person. So okay, so I have an antenna in the cloud, and if one is available and I want to watch something, I can't think of anything at the moment, that's over the air. Seinfeld. Yes, exactly. If I want to watch Seinfeld in syndication, I can do that. And I can stream it live, and I can even DVR it. Still bits, still coming over a wire, only it's a much longer wire, right? It's going from the antenna in New York City through that network, over, you know, the backbone, through my Fios connection, and it's bits over a wire. Is that about, does that sound, is that overkill? That's about right. So the Supreme Court has basically said, sorry, that wire is different than the wire that connects to your local antenna. You can't connect your antenna at a distance. Your antenna has to be connected locally in order for you to use, in order for you to grab those bits from the air and watch them or record them. And I'll go on record saying, I think that's bullshit, but.
I mean, is it any different than, you know, song sharing? I mean.
So again, I think John's analogy is the sort of the best one. I think the difference is about proximity. If I actually even, instead of potentially even seeing these particular antennas, if these antenna minuscule as they may be actually sat with me, perhaps we wouldn't be actually having this litigation today either, because there's something about the proximity to your home. And
well, there isn't. There, we covered a product a few weeks ago that did just that. It was a DVR for over-the-air broadcasts. And it's perfectly legal, and you can buy it and stick it in your house.
Yep. I think it really demonstrates yet again that I think part of the problem with the Supreme Court and just in general courts taking on some of these cases have an extreme sort of admiration for the attorneys and really the judges who sit on these cases, but they don't tend to be technically savvy. And I wonder really when I was looking at this case, whether or not truly the attorneys who were part of Arrows made a good enough case to the Supreme Court to really build enough analogies to them to sort of help them understand the similarities to existing technologies today and why it really cuts off at the knees, you know, potentially new developments in technology. So,
yeah, but okay, you know what? That's a great point. I don't know anything about the attorneys that made this case. But look at the case that I just made. Or I'm a layperson, right? Okay. But look at the case that I just made moments ago in a span of 2 or 3 minutes. Surely they must have covered that common sense, perspective on this issue, right? I mean, again, to your point, what's the difference? It's proximity. It's still bits over a wire, and it's bits over the air to an antenna to a wire to my computer. So how much more of a case do we need? Apparently more than we got. Apparently more than they were able to deliver, I should say.
And the thing for me that is, you know, kind of confusing is the fact that they were just rebroadcasting free programming. You know, it wasn't like they were stealing it and then selling it to people. These are signals that are already available for free, and they're allowing other people to access them.
Well, yes, I completely agree. But we also know how we also know about the control that media companies like to exert on their content. Right? Look at windowing. Yeah. You know, I mean. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the phrase, windowing is the media company's perspective on releasing certain types of content through certain channels at different periods of time. So that's why you can get the Avengers movie in the theater, but you can't get the Avengers movie at the same time on the internet as a digital download or as a stream or what have you. So and it helps protect, windowing helps to protect existing media distribution channels. So. But I don't see, if anything, I would think that you'd be improving your viewership as opposed to taking away from it, right? You'd be increasing it because it becomes more convenient. So I feel like there's just lots of shooting into feet with various projectiles here.
But I actually think it's a good segue into our previous conversation where the past mediums try to define the new mediums. And I think that the legal groups are still thinking about old television and, you know, are overly sensitive to trying to protect that as opposed to looking at the new version of technologies that could enhance, you know, users' entertainment experience. So just a lot of old farts who,
Well, yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. But I guess because this is such a simplistic perspective on digital media, like what's a download? What's a file? What's a stream? And all this other stuff. This is an antenna. It's just an antenna that lives in the cloud. And that's why I just find this ruling just ridiculous, because it's the closest thing to old media as I can think of at the moment, and it should just be cut and dry.
But it just freaks people out to, you know, if I'm a broadcast company and I'm broadcasting my programming over there and somebody else is taking it and making money off of it, that freaks me out.
I guess, but then didn't the company that sold Steve his antenna make money?
Yeah.
So what's wrong with that? Yeah, so I didn't buy. It's an antenna as a service. It's not. You don't own the antenna. It's antenna as a service.
But it's like if I buy a CD and then hand it to you and, you know, let you copy it, that's fine. But I guess, you know, the other thing of, you know, putting it up on the internet for everyone else to download it, the music company's going to freak out.
Ah, I guess. All right. But here's the next thing that's happening, though, is, Shailen, I don't know if you saw this, and I always point to you as our, you know, legal advisor here, not advisor, our legal angle. They're planning to take it to Aereo management is planning to take this to Congress. I don't understand that. Wouldn't they just take it to a higher court, or is there a higher court? Where was this case heard? Was it Supreme Court?
It was heard at the Supreme Court level, I believe. And I think that taking it to Congress means shifting basically some of the broadcast laws involved as well. And so, and it, that may be the other route to take it.
So it's lobbying. When they say, when I see headlines that say they're taking it to Congress, they're talking about lobbying Congress and the FCC and changing the laws.
I think that needs to happen. I do think that that's sort of the direction they're looking at. So.
Well, good luck with that, because this is someone I was listening to a podcast recently, and I never heard it put forth in these terms, right? But it makes total sense. You know, we've never lived in a time where change happens at this speed, yet we still elect our leaders every 4 years. And so there are no immediate implications of poor decision making or poor policy making, because usually by the time the next election comes, people forgot about it, the media glosses over it, and it's just business as usual. This to me just seems like a perfect example of why we need government to catch up with our life, right? I mean, that's really what it is. We need government to catch up with life. When a co-founder of Tinder, you know, a bros app, right? Yeah, can be suspended because of, you know, offhanded comments and a few other things that happened over the course of a few months. Why shouldn't politicians be able to be removed from office or changed out to adapt to, you know, what goes on in the United States? And this is a much bigger question, but really, it just just makes me think about how the hyper-connected society that we live in and how government in general is just so disconnected from it and in terms of managing it and accepting it.
Yeah, we can't talk about Tinder here because that will make me foam at the mouth. So
Tinder is just blows my mind because honestly, you know, as a nice Italian boy from New Jersey, some of the stuff that people have snapshotted and posted to the interwebs about what men actually post to this service. I'm like, really? Like, are you serious? Like, you're looking to attract women with that mentality? It's just like, the only thing you're going to attract is a baseball bat upside the head. Like, what is that? I don't get it.
Yeah. I feel like we generally, on this podcast make it sort of, a fairly loose rule that we try not to talk about some of the things that maybe would be covered by Gawker, or ValleyWag. Because it's just really not the
yes.
type of focus we like to have. So for those folks who are wondering what we're talking about in terms of co-founders and CMOs being removed from Tinder, you know, please visit ValleyWag. Well, actually, try not to visit ValleyWag or Gawker. And try to just basically go and look at the case. And so the case actually is fairly atrocious in terms of the things that this particular founder said. And so they're being sued. So
Yes. But yeah, so sorry, not to actually give them more promotion. You know, we just gave them, I guess in some respects, we just promoted them, which I was the last thing I want to do. But the point being is that this person was finally removed based on activities. It's no different than what happened with one of the co-founders of Rap Genius and everything else. And it's just like, you know, something occurs, it's inappropriate, you're gone, you know, and it's just like, you got to be on your toes at all times. And that just doesn't happen in government. And it should, especially in instances like the Aereo case.
Look, it doesn't happen practically anywhere. I think for some strange reason, it's moving just a teeny bit, and I don't mean a lot either, just a teeny bit faster in tech, because all we have to do is refer to the case about the American Apparel CEO. Appalling and illegal activities have been happening with this particular CEO, at least certainly awful experiences has been, but you know, they're only sort of removing him now in many ways because the company's doing poorly, because his audacious behavior, and I mean audacious in a bad way, has been going on for years, right? So it takes a long time. It seems that we have a certain level of tolerance for bad behavior and stupid decision making as a whole. So see, I'm foaming already at the mouth. So
put that in a bud there. You don't like child pornography and advertising?
Yeah, moving on. Yeah, I've never been a fan of. Go ahead, Craig.
But I'm saying, you know, I have teenagers and a college age child, and you know, for me, Tinder's like old news. Now it's Yik Yak, baby.
The heck is Yik Yak?
You don't know what Yik Yak is?
I don't know. I don't. First, I haven't dated in 20 some odd years, so what the hell do I know?
Not even really dating. It is anonymous posting.
And so it's like secret with sex? What?
No, it's like people go on and they just got $10 million in funding.
Of course they did.
And it's called the Twitter of your college campus, where you can go on and post things about people anonymously. Mm-hmm. And it also is big in high school, in fact, and the you know, claim to be very responsible that they now geofence it. So the app does not work. They've geofenced high schools. So the app does not work on the high school grounds because that's their protection.
Yeah. So they also have, I mean, it seems very LBS focused, but it gives you sort of, for example, if you're entering an area, you could basically have a sneak peek feature. I don't think it's called sneak peek. I think it's called peek feature. That allows you to sort of check out the feed of a certain location, see if you want to join in the Yik Yak, what they're saying about this place. So there's some theoretically legit sort of discussions here. Perhaps, you know, anonymous postings about a restaurant and services at a restaurant. Yeah, but I think primarily it has been much more of a secrets, geographic, LBS located secrets.
But I heard a story about it on NPR, so it's probably already old news.
I think the minute you basically take $10 million and you're on NPR, it's not cool anymore.
But my kids have been talking about it, and Snapchat is over. Yik Yak's the thing.
We need to have your kids basically, you know, come in as the youth commentators.
Oh, that would be good, actually. Having you know, one from the household and one from college, and you know. We can hide their face. We can obscure their faces, something.
Or that every week they basically propose cool app or cool service of the week, you know, from anonymous daughters.
Well, my one daughter's away at camp for 7.5 weeks, and my other daughter comes back from Vietnam in 2.5 weeks, and she might be up for it, my college age.
But that would be fun.
Works for me. I'd love that. So So it's not that I have a problem with some of these anonymous apps in general. Anonymity has always been a virtue on the internet, right? It's allowed people to speak up and not be criticized or harassed, etc. But I just find some of these anonymous apps to be just what's the word I'm looking
slimy?
For?
Slimy
is a word. Slimy is definitely a word. But really, it's just they tear down. They tear people down versus adding value.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, which is why this one guy got, I don't even know all the details. What's that?
Divisive.
It is. They are divisive. I would agree with that. That's a good term. All right, moving on. What else is news this week? Well, let's see. Speaking about the divisiveness of technology, Facebook manipulated users' feeds for a psychology experiment. And the only reason we knew about it is because Facebook scientists, I'm joking. Yes, it's a for-profit company, but they can certainly have legitimate scientists. But the only reason we knew about it is because Facebook scientists published a paper on the topic about how they took a portion of users and who remembers this? They posted some more negative feeds, some more neutral feeds, and some more positive feeds to see how people react. What are the details? Who wants to run with that? Come on.
Hey, I jumped in on the last one.
All right, Craig.
I don't have the details, John.
All right. I don't have all the details. All I know is that was the gist. No, there is no link. I'm sorry. I'm a bad host tonight. I didn't include a link. So I don't have the paper, although I'm told it was actually a fairly well-prepared paper for their peers to review. But Facebook had taken – so it's they took the opportunity to post in some people's feeds, and I don't know the numbers now so because we don't have the link. Maybe while I'm talking this up, one of you guys can find a link. Certain percentage of those in the study were given more negative news in their feed. Some were given sort of neutral news, however you define that, and others were given more shown more positive news. And whether this was done, well, I'm sure it was done algorithmically, but whether it was automatic or whether there were some dials and levers involved, I don't necessarily recall. But the goal was to see how it affected people in their postings to Facebook and in their other interactions. And I don't know how they measure quote unquote other interactions because obviously they're not reading people's email or anything like that. And again, this is Facebook, who knows?
I mean, I certainly find it interesting that they actually were trying to post that they believe that the influences of sort of positive news would affect other positive postings. I mean, you know, I certainly think that's a very, I certainly, how's this, as a marketer, find this very intriguing, right? You know, for me, it's almost like a marketing experiment, right? The reality of, you know, understanding, is it better to basically deliver more upbeat messages in order to garner more sort of upbeat feedbacks and postings overall? And so what they've done is they've actually, to a certain degree, helped themselves and their advertisers to sort of look at, you know, what does it mean to basically feed positive data versus negative data and how that basically changes outcomes, right? And so that's, I think, a very interesting perspective. And what's just scary is that they experimented on our feeds. And feeds are sacrosanct to people, certain people. So they care
but
about
term this, is how called this marketing things. Scientist.
I love it.
Marketing scientist.
I find it interesting as a marketer. I find it interesting, you know, but I also do not care as deeply about the data I get to a certain degree from my feeds. I understand that my feeds will come with some marketing material. It's a free service. And so, but people tend to be very, very obsessive about their Facebook feeds. So, and I can see why they're shocked by it.
Well, I guess because they're quite literally, you know, feeding emotional content and expecting to gauge the emotional content in return based on that. So I can understand that, but all right, so let's play devil's advocate. How is this any different than an A-B test? You know, does the red button drive more clicks than the blue button? I mean, so there are many people who are making this argument, like, hey, we do A-B tests all the time. It just so happens that we're trying to sell stuff versus elicit emotion from people. What's the big deal? Craig, you're the big online, you're the big customer acquisition guy.
I don't think it is a big deal. It's, you know, trying to create a better user experience, probably also trying to create more, you know, more page views that they can sell for advertising. I mean, but I also think that people should know when they're being, you know, when they're in the the Skinner box. And I mean, that's, it should be privacy. I don't know. I guess, direct mail people do it all the time, you know, with A/B split testing, sending different versions of direct mail packages. Advertisers do it all at the same time, doing A/B split testing on landing pages. And why should your Facebook feed be any different?
Yeah, this is like a ginormous A/B testing arena. I think people are offended because they see feeds as very personal things, but feeds aren't. You know, feeds are part of the marketing drivers of Facebook. So,
newsflash: it's not yours; it's Facebook's.
Facebook's, and right. I think that's where the balance of the concerns might be. Right, so.
Anytime something is free and ad supported, you are the product. I forget who was quoted, and I'm sure I misquoted it. It was that's a paraphrase, but someone, I forget who said that. But I guess the difference being that you're interacting on Facebook with friends and family. I mean, what happens if someone left, you know, spent some time on their Facebook feed and they left that experience being extremely depressed and possibly took actions that they may not would have otherwise. You know, ethics, you know, ethics here are the ethical issues here are untested, right? No one's considered them.
I think what we're going to have problems here, though, is that Facebook ultimately is tied to your friends and family, right? So, and this is how they're going to make money. And so if they cannot make money because you feel so protective of your friends and family network, then they might as well go out of existence because, you know, they're a very great, you know, voluntary, contributed technology then, right? It's not a viable, you know, technology company or concern if they cannot make money.
So did they say, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I guess like people find it, again, their argument has always been that, well, you know, it's personal because it's friends, it's family. I'm like, people, then actually go and talk to your friends and family. Don't do it online if you feel so offended.
Did Facebook say what the purpose of that experiment was? Or was it just to see if they could change people's behavior by showing them, you know, depressing news stories and see if people's behavior change, or were they actually trying to improve the user experience?
Behavior change. So we're seeing basically positive postings garnered more positive postings and negative postings garnered more negative postings. So there was behavioral change that they were recording and tracking.
And so what does that tell them, that now they're just going to post positive things?
You know, that's a big question.
Well, think about the level of manipulation we're talking about there. I mean, you know, what if, I was about to say, what if our government, I wouldn't put it past our government, but it would take a while before they did it. Other governments could just say, hey, Facebook, you know, we want you to post anything you post in this country should be have more of a positive lean. We don't want it to be negative. We want all of our citizens to feel positive, like that's and filter out all the negative. No problem there, right? It sounds like a Putin thing to do. Sorry.
Or Illuminati.
Right, or the Illuminati, exactly. The Knights Templar, yes.
The pacification of the New World Order.
It's a Dan Brown book. Perfect. I love that. All right. By the way, I think I fixed my audio. Thank you. I left my online backup software running while we recorded this. I broke my own rule.
It sounded like auto-tune for
this. Yeah. Well, I'm here at my in-laws, and they have great download speeds. The upload speeds are okay. Actually, they're better than okay, but you shouldn't be backing up gigabytes of video to the interwebs while you're recording a show. All right. So, moving on. Speaking of weird sounds, all right, let's talk about this a little bit. Shailen, we are going to talk about this because this has been a discussion over time. So Chromecast The Chromecast device is doing from Google has been doing really well. It's an inexpensive video distribution device. It's got a USB connector. You plug it into your tele. I'm sorry, it's got a USB and HDMI connector. The USB connector is for power, and the the HDMI connector is to connect your television. And up until this point, you've been able to stream content from Chrome on your desktop to this device, so video. Well, the actual display, but as well as video. And there are apps for Android and iPhone that similarly allow you to do the same, push video to your device. So at Google I/O, they just announced the ability for Chromecast to grab feeds, grab video feeds, and push them to your television. So basically, instead of having your computer or your phone act as the intermediary, they're going to take it from the interwebs, from wherever, and push it to Chromecast. So everyone wondered how they were doing this. I was wondering how they were doing this. I figured there was some secret sauce. We just learned that they're going to be using ultrasonic sounds to pair your TV with friends' phones and their apps, and of course the streams that are being produced by those apps. It sounds a little sci-fi to me, but we do live in the future, don't we?
Can you explain what that means in layman's terms?
In layman's terms, okay. Here's a perfect example. Ready? Remember modems, Craig?
Absolutely.
Oh, no, it's actually technically not just modems, but remember how
fax machines.
Yes. But remember, okay, so now I feel bad saying because I'm dating myself. Remember that movie Hackers where people used to call? I think it's called Freaking.
Freaking. Angelina Jolie, baby, Hackers.
Thank
yes.
Thank you. So, but actually, the way that he hacks basically people's phones is by basically playing a prescribed sort of sound feedback to the technology system, and it basically gives you access to call the world, right? And
2400. So
exactly. 2400.
Exactly. All based on sounds.
It's all right. Exactly. It's all based on sounds. So for the kids listening here, we used to have to use a thing called a modem where, you know, this device that you connected to your computer made sounds, and those sounds are translated into bits. And there was a device on the other end that listened to those sounds and translated them back to bits and blah, blah, blah. So same thing. So they're going to be using, except in this case, unlike the sound of the modem, you know, wah, wah, and all that you hear, these are ultrasonic sounds. So basically, they'll disturb bats and dogs, I guess. But we won't be able to hear them. But those sounds will help connect devices and services. I think it's interesting. I think it's now what I'm surprised about is that the hardware can support these sounds, right? I mean, this hardware, because that's how, think about that. It's improved so much that now we can actually produce sounds that are outside our range of hearing because the devices are that good, and then use that technology as a means for transferring data or sending certain signals. Again, we live in the future. It's a whole new world.
Can you explain to me how it works though? So it says to take the ultrasonic sounds from my friends and family's phones. So that means when people come to my house and they're within a certain range of my television, it'll pick up stuff from their phone? Is that how?
Well, think about it as an instruction set. So in terms of the specifics, I will admit I don't know, because the only thing I've seen are like screenshots from a Google presentation and snippets of video. But yes, it's sort of – another way to think about it is TV remotes, right? Mm-hmm. It's line of sight. They use infrared, right? And you have to point the remote at the television, and it changes the channel. It's no different, right? It uses ultrasonic waves, which means that you obviously need to be within quote-unquote hearing distance, right? It is a localized sort of thing. I don't know how many feet that it needs to be, but it needs to be within you know, something where the device is sensitive enough to pick it up, and you send instructions over those wavelengths, and that's about as good as I can get, because I'm not a hardware or scientist or a software developer or anything like that.
And I work at Google, I can't comment, but I also know nothing about technology. And the fact that I just use 90s movie technology reference to help folks who most of the millennials listening to the show will not have seen that movie says something. The fact that I can't help basically explain what this is either.
No, but I'm sure they know who Angelina Jolie is, and that enough should get them to go visit that classic film. So there you go.
Indeed.
All right. What else? Speaking of set-top boxes, this is another multi-layered story. Amazon Fire, the Amazon Fire TV box, which has been released recently. I guess what are we talking about? 2 months, maybe. So it's their equivalent to the Apple TV, and the now upcoming Android TV, which we don't know enough about, but it'll be similar. So someone had a bug. There's a bug in Android TV that, this is the headline now from GigaOm, provides another reason why data caps are anti-consumer. So the story goes, a gentleman who happens to be a journalist, part of the media, as we just discussed, was having an issue. He didn't understand why he exceeded his 250 gig data cap by almost two orders of magnitude. Couldn't figure out what it was. It turns out that he was testing an Amazon Fire TV, and the Fire TV was running some screensaver process in the background, and basically this guy had to pay God knows what the overage charges were on his cable service because of this device. And so it's funny because they always put the onus back on for these issues back on the consumer. But here was a consumer who had no idea that this, you know, supposedly completely vetted device would have been, you know, safe to use on his network, and he got dinged for it. And you know, these are things that your average consumer just isn't necessarily going to understand. But you can bet when they get the bill, they're not going to be happy. It goes back to the FCC's policies about what is open internet access and what isn't, and how things like this really should just be considered to be blips in the overall process, as opposed to being, I won't call them financial hardships, that's extreme, but really, you know, this is a broken device, and the consumer shouldn't be held responsible for it. That's all I'm getting out of you guys, huh? That's it.
You know what? It is actually mind-boggling to me that this was a bug that was, you know, all things probably for Amazon, how horrifying that this is discovered by a journalist, right? And so, you know, again, I think we've talked about this in other shows. And so this cap, it is becoming problematic. And now we've seen actually one of those issues, right? It's cropping up. So because there's going to be a number of technology that potentially could crop up that could actually break the cap unwittingly for a consumer. And I don't think that the product manufacturers are doing it willfully, but you know, nobody should get stuck with a $3,000 bill because there was a bug in their Kindle. So
you're right, but I guess my feeling is it's like fighting the phone company is resistance is futile. I mean, have you ever had an anomaly charge on your phone bill and then trying to get them to take it off is like,
yeah,
not a pleasant experience.
Yeah, I went through this issue with my son. He went to Puerto Rico to visit my in-laws. So my same wonderful in-laws who live here at the beach in the spring and summer, they spend a good amount of time in Puerto Rico during the winter months. And so he went down to visit them, and I told him to make sure he was on Wi-Fi when he was using his phone. Well, he decided he was going to watch Minecraft videos on his phone. Now you're supposed to be on an AT&T network when you're down there, but I really think it's just a roaming. It's a peering agreement where it says it's on AT&T, but it's not actually AT&T, right? It's just a roaming agreement. So I didn't get the notifications that we were going past our limit until after they got back from Puerto Rico, like 8 or 9 days later. And to Craig's point, I just wasn't even going to fight it. Really? Like, it cost me an extra $15 for some extra data for the month. And I'm like, you know, I think at the end of the month, by the time the month is over, it cost me an additional $30. And, you know,
nothing.
It's not, but it's not. Is it worth my time? Is it worth an hour on my on the phone with AT&T? No,
it is not. But think of the people who go to Europe and are checking their email and get hit with a $3,000 data charge, mm-hmm. right? Because they don't switch over to the international plan. And we're going to do an experiment because I told my daughter, under no circumstances do you use your phone in Vietnam if you're not on Wi-Fi. It should be in airplane mode the entire time, or you're responsible for the bill when you get back. So we shall see how that experiment works.
Oh, we got to hear about that one.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, she's a responsible kid, and you know. But I will say, my son is a pretty responsible kid. I mean, no questions. But he just thought he was on Wi-Fi, and yeah. Well, when I told him he had to pay me $30 at the end of the month, though, he wasn't happy. But he had to dig into the piggy bank to pay for his data usage, and that was an eye opener.
Dude, $30 is nothing. He got off lucky.
Oh no, he did. We all got off lucky. But you know, he's 11, right? It's just $30. You mean I was going to spend that $30 on a new video game? Well,
Leroy Johnson.
Yeah, not sorry. You lose. All right. Moving on. All right. I think we're going to wrap up this week's show with we'll call it a public service announcement, for lack of a better term. Shailin, tell us about this thing called KiteString and why it's important to us on this 4th of July weekend.
So KiteString is an SMS sort of application and service that basically allows folks to pull into their emergency list and basically plan to say, hey, look, John, I'm walking home from the bar to my apartment. I know it's only about 15 minutes and you don't have to walk me. You know, it's literally 10 minutes away from my house. Then don't bother walking me from the bar, but I'm going to put you and Craig on this, you know, on KiteString. And then if you don't hear back from me in about 10 minutes assuring you that I've arrived, then it's going to basically send out an SMS to you to say, hey, you guys have got to call Shailin and see if she's okay. And so we've recently had a lot of discussions about sort of safety for kids on campus and, you know, just generally, I think safety factor, especially as we're heading into 4th of July. And I wanted to sort of recommend that this is a great service for folks who, you know, have folks that they want to keep track of, maybe Craig's daughters, for example, to use with her friends while they're out and hanging out with folks. But it's actually also created by a MIT master's student. He doesn't want to make any money off this. Is not his money-making scheme. He created this thing for his friends and his girlfriend. And so, you know, he's a great coder, brought in two other coders to basically help him build the service for the UK as well. And so let's support him by, you know, doing a free or the premium service and, you know, keep each other safe. I actually have posted this to a couple of my women's lists, as well as my Facebook and Twitter, because I do think that it's that great an application and service. And I really hope that folks would use it to basically, you know, just make sure that we're being part of a larger, you know, good community and using technology in a way that's helpful. And because we spend a lot of time talking about technology, both good and bad, and doing lots of different things, but this is one of those things that sort of I'm passionate about, and I'm hoping that folks will pick it up and make sure that, you know, they're keeping each other safe. So
that's awesome. So how can we support them? It looks like there's a premium plan, $3 a month, people.
Yeah,
$3 a month to keep the service going.
Absolutely. And literally it's to help him keep the service up and SMS sort of, you know, product up. And so he's, like I said, an MIT master student, really is not out there to sort of make cashola on this thing. And so he just wants to do good. So let's help him do some good and actually, you know, help keep folks safe. I remember when I was in college, this would have been a great application or service for when I was, you know, in college. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's the digital version of, I think when I was in college, they had something where you could call if you're on campus and somebody would come and walk with you.
Yep.
Yep.
An escort service, not an escort service. But.
Not that kind of escort service. Yeah.
But literally, it's even just a little thing. Like, you know, the reality is that, you know, for example, in New York, lots of folks live within walking distance from where they were going to go, or they could take a cab and they have to walk just a little bit to get to their apartment. And so many things could happen in a very short period of time. And so it's nice to be able to know that, you know, there are folks who are going to check up on you if you don't maybe make it to the destination in a timely manner. And so it's not saying that you're going to broadcast it to the 30,000 people on your, you know, Twitter list or anything like that, but you know, for your closest folks and friends, you know, they probably want to check in on you. So it's a easy and sort of non-intrusive way to basically ensure that everybody's safe and make it home and make it to their destinations in one piece.
I love it. You know, I'm just thinking too, this also helps the nagging mom syndrome, right? Because whenever we go visit my parents, you know, it's like, bye, good night, thanks for dinner, thanks for ring us when you get home. Mom, really? We're going to get home at midnight. No, just ring us so we know you're safe. Now it's just like, great. Now we sign up for kite stringing. I don't have to call mom when I get home. It's brilliant. That's worth $3 a month right there.
Exactly. Exactly. So
look at Craig sharing a screen.
Ooh. Yes.
You are now viewing Craig. I can't. All right. There it is. Craig's playing. Craig likes to play with new software, I guess. All right.
Yes.
Yeah. So, all right. You know, again, if you're a part of a sorority, I don't think anybody who's in a sorority is probably listening to this, but if you're in a sorority, this is perfect for every sorority member, for example.
Right? My daughter will be joining Phi Beta Psi next year.
Oh, well, so.
Yeah, all right.
Have them work on this because, and I actually been sort of advising the founder of the company, the programming engineer, and you know, I think it's because I'm passionate and I'm a volunteer. I don't make any money off of this either, and it's because I think, you know, so many people could just benefit from this. So
cool, love it. KiteString, it's kitestring.io for those who are listening in. Definitely check it out. In fact, I may grab a subscription for my wife, especially if she remembers to use it.
And for Jack.
Exactly. Again, if he remembers to use it. But it's all right. That's what Apple's Find My Friends app is for. I always know where they are anyway, even though they don't know I know. All right. I think we're going to call this an episode. We're going to wrap up the beach episode. So, starting with the West Coast, Ms. Simmons, if someone wants to reach out to you and thank you for joining us this evening, how can they find you?
Well, they can find me on the internet. And so you could just search for me at Shailin Simmons, ChailinSimmons.com, or that's the same Twitter handle, ChailinSimmons.
Awesome. Convenient. I said this before. Too hard to get John Federico. Mr. Calder, where can people thank you? Reach out, say hello, learn more about what's going on.
CraigCalder.com and C. Calder pretty much on every social media platform. And I will be at Dealer Summit on the 15th next week in New York City, which is a very cool conference put on by Dealer.com with representatives from Facebook and Google, talking about technologies working with the auto industry.
Ah, very cool. I wish I would have known, but we would have mentioned it at the top of the show. All right. I'll make sure I put that in the show notes. And of course, I'm John Federico. You can learn more about me. Visit gadgetboy.org. You can find me. I'm Gadgetboy pretty much everywhere. Find me on the Twitters and the Facebooks. More about the show. Send us more listener comments. We love your comments. Send them to comments@odmcast.com. Do not send us fashion pitches, which we got today. We don't care about your Italian fashion, your Italian clothing line.
But definitely.
Yeah, the shoes. Yes, we care about the shoes. Well, you care about the shoes. Okay. But you can find the show on iTunes. Visit us there. If you're lucky enough, you get to see us, me at the beach, and Shailen and Craig on YouTube. You can check us out there on our YouTube channel. You can also find us on SoundCloud and Stitcher. And if you search the Googles, you'll find us in a whole bunch of other places too. So thanks for joining us. Until next time, this has been the Beach Edition, the July 4th Beach Edition of On Digital Media. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.